when we find ways to connect and enable those unhealthy traumatic responses, which usually are in the form of, let's just say, unhealthy emotions that consume us, that overcome us to the place where we're reacting instead of responding consciously. That's where all of these terrifying situations come in this world. The way to navigate and manage them is to have proper understanding and then respond intellectually or from the conscious mind.
Welcome to Give a Heck. I am your host, Dwight Heck, and for much of my life, lived my life in quiet desperation, wondering how I was going to pay the bills, take vacations, save for retirement, and one day wondering if I would get off the hamster wheel of life and have purpose. A life that most of society lives, which takes us to work, then home, then repeat, and pays us hopefully enough just to survive. The harsh truth that most live with more month than money and have no idea how to live life on purpose, not by accident. This ensures the mass majority are living not just financially broke, however emotionally and mentally as well due to financial pressures. In each episode, I will introduce you to thoughts, ideas, and guests that can help you to learn how you too can live life on purpose, not by accident.
Good day, and welcome to Give a Heck. On today's show, I welcome Madhu Das. Madhu, formerly a monk, is a holistic health and business lifestyle coach who has trained hundreds of health, wellness professionals, coaches, and influencers in the ancient sciences and helps him create 6- and 7-figure online businesses. He lived and trained for half a decade as a monk in the Bhakti yoga tradition. During these years, he traveled extensively studying Vedic arts and sciences under renowned teachers. In his free time, he is a professional musician who tours internationally. I'd like to welcome you to the show, Madhu. Thanks so much for agreeing to come on and share with us some of your life journey.
Oh, I'm so grateful to be here with you, and especially with all of the good that you're sharing into this world. It takes so much time, energy, and diligence to keep a beautiful podcast like this going. And so I'm excited to talk about some relevant and helpful topics together.
Yes. And as we talked about prior to hitting record, I believe you're going to have lots of fantastic information to share with others. And a lot of times when we share information, it's involving our lives. And one of the things I love to focus on is a person's origin story from their earliest recollections. And as I mentioned to you prior, your origin story is fascinating. And I want, there's no use me telling the origin story of your life and reading it out in a bio. It's better for you to share it because it's going to come with your energy, your passion and excitement for life. And that started at a very young age for you, did it not?
Yeah, definitely. I was a weird child in consideration to most other children my age.
So, Madhu, do me a favor and share your origin story. You know, the key things from your childhood to adulthood to led you to where you're at currently in life. Please and thanks.
Yeah, well, in brief, I grew up in a family of what I would call like normal spiritualists. It means you just think they were normal folk, sweet. My parents are just very sweet, generous, kind people, but very steeped in their own spirituality. And really what that means is a mood of service and a mood of divine connection. And like any proper child, I wasn't into it because if your parents do it, you have to rebel. You have to be against it. And so I thought it was strange, but inevitably, just through osmosis, just through being around it, I started to familiarize myself from a young age with concepts that aren't, say, taught scholastically, aren't taught in, you know, first grade. And that is like, what is a soul? Like, I'm not a body. I have a body. I'm a soul. I'm a unit of consciousness. And what is consciousness? And what is my relationship with other entities that are conscious? And how do I want to treat them? And, you know, what is divinity? And what's my relationship with divinity? These are the types of topics I was hearing about from a young age. And again, I was oftentimes closing my ears and saying, oh, this is weird. Can you just give me my video game and leave me be, or whatever the case might be. But, you know, truth burns. You can't unknow something. And just by being around these topics and hearing about them, inevitably it made me curious as a child, where I started asking the big questions about that big day we all have to look forward to. Like, what is death? And what does it actually mean to die? And what's the purpose of life if we're just going to die? And so I was very curious as a young man. And somehow or other, that led me onto a journey of trying to answer a lot of questions. And that was through the span of my teenage years studying philosophy and theology, and really up until when I was 18, on my 18-year-old birthday, I shaved my head, put on robes, and moved to India to be a monk and lived in a monastery in an endeavor to really try to understand who I am as a person and how can I actually be a contributor in this world and not a taker.
Yeah, that's, and the interesting thing though is that most people, as you mentioned, you know, our parents have certain ways, learned behaviors they teach us or that we hear. We may not even be taught. It might be indirectly taught from family and friends, surroundings. You know, maybe we go to church or we go to whatever you want to call it. We go to a spiritual place with our parents. We hear all this stuff. And like you said, we just want our video games. We just want to be able to be us. Because we're not all about that. Our mindset, our emotional center, our emotional IQ hasn't evolved enough yet. So we shut it down. It's when we get older that we stop that rebellion and realize how much we actually have learned. So I appreciate you sharing that. You know, what is consciousness? You know, what is consciousness? What is divinity? Those are things I think that many people need to understand. In the sense that not so much to delve in and spend hours researching it, but really what is consciousness? What is divinity? What is a soul? Like, why do we live and die? Questioning what is going on in our life takes us off the hamster wheel of life and gives us a sense of purpose. It gives us a sense of connection to others, because guess what? We're not the only people thinking that, are we, Madhu? Everybody's thinking it.
They don't ask
the question.
Yeah.
Right. So if you don't ask the question, how are you ever going to get the answer? Right. How are you ever going to wonder? The thing is I think a lot of times, give me your take on this. Do you think a lot of times people don't have those conversations about spirituality or connection to faith and our, you know, divinity, our soul, our consciousness, because they're afraid of the answer? Or are they afraid of being criticized because they're asking?
I think that there's various fears and motivations in this world, depending on the way somebody's conditioning was developed in their childhood. But one thing I do know for certain is that anyone who sits for a long enough time and introspects, and actually what I mean by sit is not distracting oneself and not finding ways to consume the mind and attention, will be faced with these questions. Whether they externally say them out loud or not is another consideration. And that's where we look at what are those fears or motivations that are keeping somebody to say something out loud or otherwise keep it in. But one thing that's certain is that these are questions that everyone is faced with, frankly, on a daily basis. It's just a matter of being able to sit down and actually allow us to think about life. Even before thinking, if you're just present, you start to become curious, because curiosity is the nature of the soul. And so as we become curious, we start to ask good questions, or at least ask questions, and hopefully they become better and better with time. And then inevitably we're faced with this idea, what am I? Who am I? Who are you? What are we? What's our relationship? What's divinity, et cetera? And then we're faced with dealing with those individual types of core fears or motivators that will then allow us to understand more of our limitations in life. And then accordingly, we can start to move through those limitations, which include asking questions, as you alluded to.
Yeah, it's sometimes people just don't get it because they ask poor questions too, yeah. Right? Don't be afraid to be honest with those that are in your circle. It could be one individual. You can be with a group or one person, you're having a conversation and being vulnerable and sharing your thought processes and the fact that you have questions, just be honest. I'll say to people, you know what? I got a question. I'm not intending it to sound stupid or that I'm naive or whatever, but I honestly have this question. Maybe you can help me work through it. Sometimes that person can help you that question, to reword that question, or maybe this would be a better way for you to think about it, Dwight. Maybe this is the question you really have, and this other question is just a deflection from the what you're looking for. Conversation and having people that are like-minded with you, it doesn't have to be 100% like-minded, but on the same emotional IQ level, really helps us get to the meat of what we want to understand. At least I believe that.
Right? Yeah, I would say it's essential. It's if we don't have some type of camaraderie ship, some type of companionship with, I like the term like-minded individuals, those who, in modern vernacular, some people say they vibe, you know, on the same wavelength per se. You know, it's, life becomes quite bleak because relationships are the most important thing available to us. That's why if you offered someone a $1 trillion and said you can have whatever you want forever, but you can't see anyone, no pets, no humans, you're alone forever, no one's going to take that. Trade, and even if they do, they'll change their mind in a week. And so relationships are so important. And then the way that we can really appreciate a relationship is with someone like-minded. So I do agree that it's significant and essential.
Yeah. And those listening or watching, you don't need a lot of like-minded people in your life. I know when I was younger, I wanted to say I had a big group, a big association of people. As I've aged and become more emotionally and mentally mature myself, I have my selection of people that are in my like-minded sphere has shrunk, exactly like you're showing. For those listening, Madhu used his hands and shrunk down into a small little encapsulation of a ball with his hands. And it's okay. Life is not defined by quantity, it's quality. And those quality people that you have in your life, there's ways to gauge, and you learn that through maturity, and you learn that through conversation and, you know, getting to know people like Madhu, and they can say, you know what, that person that you deal with, once in a while you bring them up and that's okay. Now it's quite frequent that they won't make you feel the best. Maybe you should reevaluate that connection, that friendship, because they become an energy vampire in your life. So I do things like that all the time too, especially in my coaching business. Family, friends, my kids, my grandkids. And so you get to a point where you know how to, you could probably agree with this, you know how to deliver things without people taking it the wrong way. It's that wordsmithing, it's that positioning of our tone, and being thoughtful about how we deliver is so important so that we can help people elevate and change their lives. And all of a sudden, like-minded people are attracted to you and you're attracted to that same thing. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah. Yeah. One consideration of communication that I always like to rely on from my teachers is communication is the sacrifice of our mental wherewithal to be able to present information in an accessible and palatable way so that the listener can actually take to heart the content. And that's a sacrifice that we take to try to share our words. I like this. You said wordsmithing. To actually be diligent in presenting information in such a way as not the way I want to express it, but rather the way that it'll actually land so that somebody could be benefited.
Well, yeah, because honestly, at the end of the day, we're a society that have been conditioned so much to listen, but not really listen. We're waiting to respond, and we're not really connected to that person and what they're saying and truly hearing what they're saying. So that when we do respond, if a response is necessary, sometimes no response is necessary, just listening and being supportive and nodding your head and showing that compassion and empathy in your face is possible, and your body is all that person needs. We don't always need to have the answer for people. And if we do have that answer, as you alluded to, it needs to be what they need to hear. It doesn't need to necessarily always be blunt and very... doesn't need to be hurtful. It just needs to be compassionate and caring. And if you notice somebody's reacting improperly, in the sense, and when I say improperly, I mean like their body's tense, or they leaning back, their arms are crossed after you said something, don't be afraid to say, you know what, I just noticed something with you, and I just said something. Did I offend you? Did I say something wrong? And a lot of times people will say to me, well, no, it hit a soft spot. It triggered something in me and made me think about something else. Oh, okay, let's talk about that. You don't have to stay on the same focus. Maybe that's what you did was meant to happen to create the focus where they needed it to be. Just be open-minded to stuff, right? So one of the things I wanted to talk to you about, Madhu, is you come from a family of yogis, and I have always been fascinated with the culture, especially since it has such a rich history that's like 5,000 years old. People don't realize how old that is. Like, come on, we're in North America. You're a few hundred years old. And like in the US and Canada, we're like 170 years old. Come on. Like, there has to be something about a culture that was developed 5,000 plus years ago that's got something that can really, that we need to take to heart, that can change our lives. Can you share the knowledge of that history and how a true, I might be pronouncing that wrong, or yogi or yogi, practices yoga as a holistic lifestyle, not the way the world has made it simply into a healthy exercise?
Yeah, the biggest misconception of yoga is it, as you alluded to, it's like gymnastics. It's like a, and don't get me wrong, I love exercise. We even do what you would call yoga in the West. But really the term is, it actually has a cognate in English. So the root of the word yoga is yuk, which we have the same word yoke in English. It means to unite or to connect, because English is a Germanic and Latin language, and Latin comes from Sanskrit. So there's a lot of similarities in the terminology, even though the language is more than 5,000 years old. So this word yoga literally means to unite or to connect. So the practice of yoga is connection. And when we're talking about connection, that means we're taking one real thing and connecting it to something else. So if we're talking about connecting, we know one of those things is us. What is it that we're connecting to? And the process is through divine connection. It's how do we actually connect to our higher purpose? How do we actually connect in such a way as to be of contribution and of service in this world? So the philosophy of the ancient yoga literatures, or in Sanskrit, the term is Vedic. Veda literally just means knowledge. It's like the wisdom literatures of the East. The content that's presented there, not only, as you mentioned, is it among some of the oldest written literatures in the world. And even when they were written 5,000 years ago, they all said, we didn't come up with this. This is stuff that has been around for a while. And it's hard to maintain something for a couple of years, what to speak of decades, what to speak of centuries, what to speak of millennia. And so the fact that you have a culture that's still around and thriving after thousands of years, there's something fascinating about that. And I think it's because if you look into the content itself, it's accessible for anyone in any space in their life. So it's not a one-size-fits-all, this is the right way to do things. It's more or less a conception of whatever science you're trying to study, because the ancient Vedic texts or yoga literatures, they don't just talk about spirituality. They talk about everything from health and wellness through Ayurveda to Dhanurveda, martial arts to the construction of architecture. I mean, they cover everything. And the whole idea is it presents knowledge in a way, and which was we refer to as reciprocal knowledge, means it always shows you where a next step that you can take to further yourself in that knowledge. So when it comes to spirituality and the yoga practice itself, the actual connection process, it gives a practice so that no matter what race, gender, ethnicity, religious background, you fill in the blank, whatever identification is there, there's a way in which everyone could benefit as a non-sectarian approach, so that no matter who you are and where you're at, there's a next step of your spiritual evolution.
Yeah, wow. And one of the things that I was thinking about even in your prior comments, when you talked about centering and I was thinking about meditation. And really, when I think about it, yoga itself, Though it's a way of moving your body, at least the way we're taught in North America, really it's grounding us and centering in us to, we're worried about poses or how we're moving, but it's also, if we're taking it serious, it's connecting us to ourselves so that maybe we think better, because maybe we're stressed out, we're done yoga, or maybe we have the ability that we practice it enough that we can be mentally connected and thinking while we're practicing it, or it grounds us enough to calm down. So at the end of the yoga, you're actually able to, decipher things that are going on in your life or move forward in a more positive fashion. Would that be something that you agree with?
Yeah. So actually the whole purpose of yoga is just that. And so there's an ancient, conception of it, it's called Ashtanga, or eight limb process of yoga. When we're talking about yoga, the most referred to literature called the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali which itself was only written, I mean, I say only, but a few thousand years ago. It means as opposed to 5,000 years ago. And this great sage Patanjali consolidated into a sutra, which means aphorisms, like short, terse concepts that help us understand, say, the more ancient context of the Vedas. And the whole process is, it starts with yamas and yamas, which functionally is controlling your senses, learning how to actually be in control of your senses in such a way that you don't make a mockery of yourself in this life and actually could be a contributor to society. And then from there, you go into the asana, which literally asana means seat. And why do we sit? It's to meditate. It's to contemplate. It's to introspect. And so all of these asanas, which if you go take a yoga class, they'll say, okay, you know, go into malasana pose, and then you're going to stand up into tadasana, and everything ends with this word asana. And most people have the misconception asana means a posture or a movement, but it actually means a seat, because all of these poses are to get your body into a position where you can sit and meditate and contemplate and introspect in such a way as to do what you so eloquently expressed, and that is to actually consider things that are important in this world.
Wow. So that kind of flows into what I have written down here, like the similarities. I was going to ask you the similarities and the unique things implemented, but today, with today's fascination with yoga and the tradition of yoga, to me, it seems like it's been, if you're talking about that sitting position to think, it's tied more to meditation than it would be to the traditional way, to compare it to today's way, which is, you know, what are they called? I don't even know all those poses they talk about. I'm not saying that's bad. So those listening, because I have friends that run yoga studios in my city, and I'm not disrespecting them. I'm just trying to understand the culture and connection back to where it actually started. And to me right now, it seems like there's a big separation between the two.
Yeah. And so what happened was, and I also preface by saying, as somebody who practices this form of yoga regularly, I'm a big fan of it. And it's like the thing itself is good. What people are doing, the yoga, like getting moving, getting exercise, is one of the best decisions anyone could ever make. And absolutely, we want to make that clear differentiation between that this is not the only, or maybe not much of what was presented in the actual ancient literatures themselves. And even historically, it's very clear that about a little over 100 years ago, one gentleman who would train the royal children, his name was Krishnamacharya, he would sit with the young boys that were the princes, pretty much the children of the royal class in southern India. And his job was to get these children to a place where they could start to sit down and meditate. So what he did is he took a little bit of Indian gymnastics, a little bit of pranayama, which is control of the breath work, and you know, a conglomerate of holistic practices, and put together what we now call, say, a Surya Namaskar or a sun salutation, pretty much the what you would take if you went to any typical yoga class. And so that's a little over 100 years old that he did that. And many of his students came to America, anyway, without getting all the details, they came to the West and they shared what their teacher taught them, which is like a pretty new practice. And it doesn't have necessarily much rooting in the Vedic or yoga conception, other than once you do all the movement and you sit down and meditate, that's when you go to the ancient literature so you can get the benefits of how to meditate effectively and efficiently, and how to actually get the benefits of meditation, how to utilize those practices in a way to really elevate your states of consciousness in life.
Yeah, wow. Well, as you mentioned, one of the terms you mentioned is misconstrued by others, and it means to sit. So that's where it triggered in me, well, then that's not real yoga. And again, I'm not cutting down what somebody created 100 years ago, brought to North America, and people have adopted, because as you mentioned, exercise and movement is good. Too many people are very staunch in their lifestyle. Go to work, go home, get paid, sit on the couch. They don't do a lot of activity. They don't move, right? So it's a start. But to me, after listening to what it was meant to be and what it's become, there's a huge disconnection happening there, because I know a lot of people that go to yoga that come out of yoga and they're sitting down to visit with friends at a restaurant an hour later having cocktails or whatever. Not saying any of that's bad, but they've never connected with themselves after becoming to a state of peace and within their 6 inches between their ears. I see a huge disconnection there. And that's why I wanted you to come on my show, is to really understand the history, because I didn't know any of this. And I bet you my listeners and viewers that are connecting right now didn't know this either, the history of it. And it's important we know history. History doesn't have to be indicative of our future, but it sure does ground us to where we started and how things have gotten better or possibly worse. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah. Because as they say, knowledge is power. And one essential aspect of knowledge is knowing what's happened in the past, aka history. And so I'm a big fan of exploring history in an objective way, because as they also say, the winners write the history books. And so not necessarily just what I would read, say, in a scholastic textbook, but diligently researching these topics in such a way as to understand what really happened and what really transpired, rather than say what just the winners might be saying and talking
about. Well, that's so true, though. You put that very eloquently, though, right? History is written by the winners, yet it's not always the truth, because it's always embellished to make people seem, you know, like they were the good person for murdering thousands of people in a war, or taking over some culture, or, you know, creating genocide. And then we get years later and we find out the truth about things. And then people are tearing down now in the last decade, tearing down statues or getting rid of. And part of me, my dad brought this up. My dad's 83 years old, and he brought this up just recently to me. He says, I get why people are destroying history. History is important, though. Instead of destroying that statue, how about you tell the story behind the fact that people they worship this person, made a statue about them, and that was because of what they were taught. Well, now here's the right teachings. See this statue? This is what it was, but this is actually what it is, so that it can be a symbol of truth. The fact that even improper stories can be corrected and that truth can come out, right? But necessarily, what do people do? They tear apart history. Now, I get why some people want to do that. Pull down statues, get rid of pictures, rename parks. We've had that happen in our city over the Indigenous challenges and stuff. We've had parks renamed because somebody 100 years ago was actually part of the process of disparaging the Indigenous people, right? So I get that. That, I agree. But at the end of the day, there has to be a story as to why it's happening. And politicians or people in power just change things, tear down things, and they don't give a story to give context to people, which causes even more confusion. At least I believe it does. What do you think about that in regards to tearing down history as opposed to preserving it and explaining it?
Well, it's definitely one of the most effective ways to get people on your side is to utilize trauma in such a way as to bring about fear and anger. And so as you mentioned, this concept that if you have false information, then the natural tendency of some might be to just reject the information. As they say, throw the baby out with the bathwater. Okay, this is wrong, therefore get rid of all of it. But actually the proper solution is to bring about reality, or bring about the truth, bring about proper conceptions, proper understanding, because that's really where we can act. Otherwise, we get stuck in a sense of blame, which gives away all of our personal responsibility of being able to take action and make changes. And so if I act from a place of fear, get rid of it, screw this all, I hate it all, it stands for nothing. It's not a progressive approach, actually. It's very degenerative in the way that it disempowers us to understand the truth. So the solution to that is, how do we understand things in a proper perspective so that we can act appropriately, act accordingly? Otherwise, again, that fear and anger will perpetuate. And then if we look into all of our hearts, certainly we're all traumatized in different ways. And so when we find ways to connect and enable those unhealthy, traumatic responses, which usually are in the form of, let's just say, unhealthy emotions that consume us, that overcome us to a place where we're reacting instead of responding consciously, that's where all of these terrifying situations come in this world, the way to navigate and manage them is to have proper understanding and then respond intellectually or from the conscious mind.
Yeah, and time. Like, people respond too quickly without, they have half-truths or mistruths, or they put somebody on a pedestal that they believe that their truth was always the truth. And then they might find some disparaging or hear some disparaging stuff about that individual or individuals that share this information, and they don't want to hear it. So they still present the same viewpoint or the same knowledge instead of doing the research, finding it out, adjusting their 6 inches between their ears, and then coming to their own consensus. You don't have to, as you mentioned, react and respond immediately. You just take the time. You know, those listening, watching, take the time. Literally, I guess the term I would think of is percolate in it. Just like sit and stew in it and ask questions to yourself. If you're, you know, a person that prays like myself, pray. You get the answers. If you don't get the answer you want, pray again. If you get the same answer, it's probably what you need to have heard. And if that makes it so that you can't trust people you used to trust, that's called evolution of you. Not evolution of society, evolution of you. You're part of society, but your growth is important too. So it's okay to question things. It's not okay to continue to project things when you know you have some self-doubt about something that you've learned, whether, you know, about history or about anything in life. It's your responsibility to put the effort in. And really, it's not that much effort, is it? People just, they make it sound like, oh, it's such a burden to have to research or put in some info or to question things. And no, it's not. It's your responsibility to yourself and to society.
Right? Yeah, everyone wants truth. It's not an artificial imposition. And the way we get truth is by studying it. And, you know, again, when you say research, really what we're doing is just diving into knowledge in a way that we can consume it. And no one is free of the desire or the curiosity for knowledge, because there's, if we look at the opulences around in this world, we'll see that there's not much more valuable than knowledge. In other words, if I said, hey, you're going to be the dumbest person you've ever met, but you're the richest. Again, who's taking that trade? It's not going to happen, because knowledge is so valuable. And so one thing that I always meditate on, and one thing I find very helpful to consider, is faith and doubt are not opposites. You know, you were mentioning so wonderfully this idea of like sitting down and praying, which everyone prays, whether you think it, whether you accept it or not, there's this concept that everyone sits down and actually has desires and then makes requests to other entities, be it a friend, be it a spouse, be it whoever it might be, for some help. And so praying is just asking the highest of high powers for a little bit of help. And that faith is actually strengthened by challenging things and asking questions. You know, you express this point so nicely that it means to challenge, it means to really consider, it means to bring these things up, it means to churn them deeper, because doubting can actually improve faith. Because if you just blindly accept things, that's as dangerous as what we say, blind doubt and blind faith are equally as dangerous. And so if you're just accepting things, that's a problem. But if you're also just unnecessarily rejecting things, that's also an issue. And so what we want to do is diligently challenge these beliefs in such a way as to really strengthen our faith in them, so that we could understand just how cared for we are in this world. Because everything in life really is a gift. And you can see that by just looking objectively, that we get a lot of things that we didn't seemingly do much to deserve. And so there's clearly benefic forces around us, forces that are there for our betterment. And so taking some time to actually show gratitude in the form of prayer, it provides not only a sense of relief, but actually a sense of, as they say, manifesting, is actually presenting our desires outwardly in such a way as to create opportunities to see those desires actually exist in real life.
Oh, I love that, because, you know, it creates a sense of peace when you have gratefulness. I do it through prayer. I do it twice a day, minimum. I can do it throughout the day if I'm struggling. I go to bed at night praying and having gratefulness for what I've had, and I dissect my day. I get up in the morning and I'm grateful for the fact I got another shot, I had another opportunity. And I like how you talked about faith you know, faith itself, the stronger my faith is by development of it, by working on it, by, and again, faith isn't just religion. People don't get that. Faith is so much more involved in our lives and in our thought processes, as you were alluding to. And one of the things that I've focused on now for about 30 years of my life is a simple phrase, and it's about faith, right? Faith knocked on the door. Fear knocked on the door. Faith answered and no one was there, right? So fear knocked on the door. Faith answered and no one was there. The stronger your faith, the stronger you work on yourself and your faith in regards to other people, right? Blind faith or convinced faith, whatever, you know, proven faith, it doesn't matter. Whenever I've been fearful about something that's going on, my faith is my shield to stop that fear, to make it so that I'm living that purposeful, peaceful life, and intertwined obviously with gratefulness and everything else. Faith, that's my, I live by three core values, just so that you are aware. My listeners know, you know, if there's a new listener and you're going to understand my three core values, starts with faith, family, work. That's it. And that's how I live my life. And I've lived it that way successfully, unsuccessfully sometimes, but most often successfully for three decades. And it all starts with faith. So I loved how you talked about that. So thanks for sharing that.
Yeah, of course. And yeah, as you said so well, fear is the opposite of faith, right?
So I even have that on, I've written it before and I've done talks about the fact that, you know, fear can be controlling your life, but if you have faith, fear just isn't there. It's gone, right? And if it creeps in, learn gratefulness and prayer to increase your faith. You know, like I myself can't see people that were around 1,000 years ago, 100 years ago, whatever, you know what I mean, that were religious or they were spiritual or whatever, but I hear their things, I read it or I'm told it and I believe it, right? Because that's, I'm having faith that that was real, right? Doesn't mean that I shouldn't put some effort into making sure there's some actual legitimacy to it though, right?
Yeah, because everyone has faith in something. It's just a question of what do we have faith in? And if we think I don't have faith in anything, it's like you have faith that your car is going to work when you get into it. You have faith that the lock on the door is going to work when you go to bed. We can make an extensive, exhaustive list on all the things that we have faith in this world. And so really when it comes to faith in anything beyond ourselves, really when we're talking about powers higher than us and divinity, we're really faced with the reality of, okay, do I just have the faith of what I've learned societally and culturally, or do I want to actually choose? Do I actually want to learn and study in such a way as to what I actually want to have faith in, as opposed to just what I vaguely heard my grandfather once say, and maybe that's what I believe. It's like actually doing our due diligence to see where do I want my faith, because I have faith in certain things. And do I want to keep my faith in where it currently is, or is there a more refined understanding of where I'd like to place my faith so that even more relief and more satisfaction and more clarity can come into our lives?
Wow. What a great way to put that. But it is, for me, that's why faith is my number one core value. Every time I focus on that, when I'm feeling down or even feeling happy, as you mentioned, faith of a car starting, faith of this, faith of that. There's so many different ways faith can be applied, but you need to apply it. You need to put effort. You need to put energy into understanding that you're even waking up, you're having faith that tomorrow. So when I have my gratefulness and I welcome, for me, again, I welcome God into my night. And I'll, before I'm about to fall asleep, I say, you know, I'll welcome into my night and I'll say, you know what? Please allow all those in my family and friends to sleep well, to be at peace, to wake up, if it is your will that they wake up, that they wake up being a servant, that they wake up serving themselves first in the best way possible with a great mindset, and then taking that out to the world to serve others. And people, when I've told them that, they kind of look at me kind of weird and I go, well, hey, it works. I stopped having nightmares, bad dreams, stress dreams, waking up and, you know, cold sweats or waking up feeling just terrible because I gave it up to something that wasn't me. I had faith that I'm giving it up, and then tomorrow I'm going to have faith, when I go to sleep, I'm going to have faith that I wake up in the morning and I'm going to get that another shot. And if I didn't, oh, well, at least I went to bed with the right mindset. So what are your thoughts about that? How we go to bed at night?
Yeah, well, gratitude is the mother of all positive emotions. There's really no successful life without gratitude. Like you won't be able to find anyone in this world that will consider themselves happy and successful that doesn't regularly practice some form of gratitude. Because that's, if we're talking about love, we're talking about gratitude. And gratitude in action is called service. And so, as you mentioned, this prayer of let me be of service first to myself and then for others, because a drowning lifeguard can't save anyone, but a strong lifeguard can save many. And so praying for our own ability to serve, and then in turn, the ability to serve others as well. This concept is that if we're looking very simply, happiness comes from love and relationships. Again, a thing can really not provide us so much happiness. It's like, yeah, I love my phone, but it's like, you don't actually love your phone in the same way you love your partner, love your child, love your parent, love your friend. It's a very different experience. It's in English, we don't have as much diversity of language as many other languages that are there, where you'll have different words for different types of love. Like there's a word for loving a thing, and then there's a word for loving a friend and loving a lover, et cetera. But the concept is clear that love is the most important driver of happiness. And the way that we experience love is through service. You do something for someone, you show your love, and then the underlying feeling behind service, in which is an action, is gratitude, is a sense that, oh, I want to do something for someone else, and I'm grateful for what I have received. And because the nature of polarity is, if you're gratitude for something that you've received, you also want to give that. And so to your point, if we're not spending time diligently thinking about it, well, we'll still probably have the thoughts because it's just the reality of life. But if we're not spending actual time sitting in that and praying, what to speak of going to bed, waking up in the morning, which is when we're the most receptive, because as we're going in and out of consciousness, our mind is in different states where we become more receptive. I mean, very clearly, if you watch a thriller or a horror movie right before bed, of course you might have some crazy thoughts while you're sleeping, and you might wake up thinking about it because that's what you put present in the mind. So there are states of consciousness throughout the day where we're more receptive or not. And so taking a more, arguably the most receptive, going right before sleep, right after sleep, and putting information in that's going to, again, not just provide sense of solace and relief, which is helpful, but actually putting that intention into the world is the most, arguably the most important time of the day to do that, because we are only products of conceptions. Means everything that we see that exists in this world has come from a thought. Somebody thunk it in their mind, and then from that idea, they start to put it in reality. A sewing machine. Somebody had to think of this idea. What if I don't do it by hand? What if we got a machine and the machine did, and had to figure it out first in their mind, and then they could start to bring it to reality. So similarly, setting that intention, what that does is it puts our optic focus on opportunities to make that exist, because our mind is only trying to prove what we're thinking and saying to be true. All it does is try to give evidence to what words are coming out of our mouth, what thoughts are coming out of our mind, trying to find reasons to prove that to be the truth. So therefore, if we're putting gratitude and appreciation and service in the mind, our brain will look for opportunities to be grateful, to be of service, to be of contribution, as opposed to if we're focusing on the negative and a disease or whatever the case might be, we're going to suffer. You know, no person who focuses on disease becomes really healthy. Rather, somebody who focuses on health becomes very healthy.
Oh yeah. It's true though. Our brain, our mind doesn't know the difference between the truth and the lie. Mm-hmm. So the information we feed it is so important. And if you're hanging around people where it's all misinformation and that's all you feed yourself, it's not healthy. It affects your health. It affects your emotional state. It affects everything. So those listening or watching, be cognizant of what you are feeding yourself. And then when you're spending time with yourself, whether it's late at night and you know, you're going to bed and you're praying and doing gratefulness or doing it in the morning, as you mentioned, your mind's the most receptive. Make sure that information you're telling yourself is positive though. right? It's not negative. Even if the positive information you're feeding yourself is still, it's a comment like, this is what I thought. Now I'm hearing something different. It might be wrong. I need to put some effort into it. But, you know, thank you for the opportunity to do that, to research, to find out, to discover, to share, to grow, right? There's so many different ways we can practice gratefulness, but it all starts with not beating ourselves up when we do find out that maybe we're not right, or we outright find out we were wrong. Just be thankful that you're alive, that you have the opportunity to grow and change, and now do that for others as well. One of the things I wanted to ask you about, you went through a period of time in your life where you were overworking your body and mind with your personal and spiritual life, with suffering. So many live a life like this with no intentional, purposeful life. I've been there. To be honest with ourselves is the number one thing we need to do, is own our own stuff. I know you had guidance from some expert teachers and coaches, just like I have throughout my life. Could you please share what this journey was like for you, and what was the number one thing you learned from working with others to achieve your dream of being the coach you are today?
Yeah, I say that if we want happiness in life, there's a term I use often, and it's got to get a guru. You got to get a guru. Got to get a guru or a teacher. There's this concept, and I say it millions of times. All of my clients, they always laugh over and over because, you know, they always know when it's coming. It's like, got to get a guru. If you want to become an expert snowboarder, you find somebody who's an expert snowboarder and who studied the thing well. If you want to become a wonderful lawyer, you find somebody who understands law and has experience as a wonderful lawyer. Whatever you want to become whatever you want to become expert at, you got to be grateful. You have to find those who can have something. You can only give what you have. And so find those who've done the thing that you want, and then learn from them, emulate them, serve them in such ways that they can empower and teach us the ways in which to not have to try to figure everything out on our own and not try to just reinvent the wheel. So whatever success I have in my life, it's due to the kindness, the diligence, the attention of my teachers who've helped me expedite the process of learning in a way that I don't have to just try to suffer throughout my life trying to figure things out on my own. And as you mentioned, I went from a place of, you know, I'd gotten a chronic autoimmune disease, and I've traveled internationally with different types of sicknesses, and I've gone through different types of really big health scares. And ultimately, it was studying health, and specifically for, in my case, a holistic perspective. It's called Ayurveda, which is the ancient Vedic concept of healing, 5,000 years old, and learning holistic health in a natural, organic way that I could rebuild my health, which really means my vitality, my energy, my mental clarity, et cetera. And spending years learning and studying these in such a way that I could learn it. And so anything I wanted to learn, I find somebody who's great at it, and I say, please tell me what to do, and I'll do my best to try to do it. Obviously, we have to do due diligence. We don't just blindly follow people and say, whatever you say. But once you've done enough proper research and understanding and using your own two eyes to witness what is and what isn't working from someone else, you know, then we submit in a healthy way and say, just, you know what to do. My limitations are going to stop me from doing it. So I need your help with moving through it. And that's the benefit of really having a coach, not necessarily just an educator, but somebody that says, hey, I know what your potential is. Been there, done that. And I know exactly what you need to do as the next step to do it. And you're probably not always going to want to do it. You're definitely not always going to want to do what I say, but I'm going to do it. And I've developed enough faith and trust in our work together that my guidance will be helpful. You know, it'll work. And so that's the benefit of having a coach, someone that you develop this relationship with that just says, hey, listen, I don't want you to have to suffer forever. I know how to get you through this quickly. And all it takes is just moving through some of these limiting beliefs and limiting mindsets. And so let's do it together. And somebody that can hold your hand and give you those pushes that are needed to actually become successful in our lives.
Yeah. You brought up so many valid points. Having a coach, and I will, as a side note, make sure the person that's coaching you or mentoring you, people that are listening to this, are people that have actually gone through it. They're not a a fake guru or a poser or somebody that is selling you that $9.99 course, yet you can't find anything about them prior in their lives that shows that they're an effective person. So back to what I was going to say, though, what in regards to your own coaching program, and I find this myself too, that people I've that have coached and mentored me, they laid out a roadmap for me. They took me on a journey that took them maybe 10 years and collapsed it down for me in 3 years, 2 years, whatever the case may be. And I paid for that opportunity to collapse those timeframes based on the fact that they suffered for 10 years. And now they're not suffering, but now they're serving others. So I'm paying for that opportunity. And I molded a lot of what I do in regards to my own practice of financial services and then my lifestyle coaching based on the roadmap they laid down for me. And I hear that the same for you. So the coaches and people that helped you out, you developed your own program around that. And obviously you added your own flair, correct?
Yeah. As a to the conversation we're having earlier with communication, it's like how to take relevant information and express it to the listener. And so really what I try to consider is take the information that I know works and then consolidate it and represent it in such a way that the person who I'm here to serve, that I've been empowered to try to contribute towards, can actually take it, but not necessarily changing the fundamentals, rather just re-expressing it or, representing it in a way that's accessible.
Yeah, it is important for us to repurpose, because your coaches and people that you had help in your life, their circle of people that they attract, they are attracted to that coach or mentor because of their communication style. And you're doing the same for yourself. You're creating your own tribe. That's what I call it, a tribe of individuals that like who you are. And yes, it's influenced by others, but you're still a unique individual, right? Every person listening to this, you're a unique individual. Just like your fingerprint's unique, you're unique, and you're going to attract people the more you grow and change based on what you've been influenced by. But you still need to be your ultimate unique self. One of the things I wanted to talk about is you learned how to integrate your purpose and offerings into a sustainable business model that you launched called Madhu Life, correct?
Yep.
And what exactly is the purpose of your business? What are you hoping, or what are you working on? Some of the things obviously that we've talked about are part of that business model, but I want the listeners to understand what your business facilitates for them and what they can expect if they reach out to you.
Well, I'll start with the like hidden, but not so hidden, real purpose of it. And that is to get all of our needs and some taken care of so that we can actually spend our time considering what's really important in life. And that is our spirituality. And so that's why what we focus on is health from a holistic perspective, which is something I've been doing now for well over a decade of taking holistic health as taught from the ancient processes of Ayurveda, or it was some of the oldest knowledge on health in the world. And we use it to naturally, through diet and lifestyle, improve somebody's quality of life so they're not dependent on things external. And so that's something I've been focusing on for years. And then we also help with relationships. So, I've only been with my wife for 7 years now or so, but inevitably giving people frameworks so that they can have healthy relationships. And then a third aspect, which is something we only started to integrate not even 4 years ago, was how to make money doing what you love and how to actually not have to go do something you don't want to do in the name of making money. But if most people, we can monetize our purpose and our passion and do it with integrity, do it in a way that's really improving others' lives, really improving our life, really improving society. And we do these three aspects. And ultimately, yes, it's important to feel better. Everyone feels better. It's important to make a little bit of money doing what you love. It's, or a lot of money, frankly, with most of the entrepreneurs we work with. It's important to have quality relationships. But ultimately, once you have the money, once you're feeling good, once you're like, you got good, great teachers, you got great students, people that you're helping, you've got great friends, you've got a great partner, then we can actually really go deep and say, well, what, this isn't giving me the happiness I was looking for. Oh man, that money is not what's doing it for me. So what is it that's actually going to make us happy? And then that's when we go deep into spirituality and really philosophy in such a way as to, who am I and why am I here and all that jazz. So ultimately we help people with their health foremost, as well as most people we serve, are wellness entrepreneurs, those who are also helping others with their health and do that in such a way that they can make good money. And, you know, for some people, good money is a few thousand bucks a month. For some people, it's tens of thousands of dollars. For some people, it's $100,000 a month. But really, it just means finding something in alignment with someone's nature and a way to monetize that so that it's with integrity, it's with service. It's not just to get an extra buck, but really to actually make a positive impact. So that's the external, but the internal is really to get people to a place where they can appreciate spirituality.
Well, and that's great though. What you were talking about though is people reach that making mass amounts of money. And I see it all the time, especially as a financial planner, they feel empty. They've reached their target and they've forgotten the journey of life, which that's spirituality, relationships, you know, health. All they focused on was money, money, money. And along the way, they forgot the journey of life. And 1, 5, 10 years goes by and I have those conversations and I ask them, like, tell me something that was things that have happened in the last 10 years. And they're struggling to tell me things that are special in their relationships and their connections with humankind. And their, you know, their families, their significant other, and all they're telling me, they can tell me everything that's always materialistic based, or they'll tell me, oh, I reached this, then I started this and I started that and all. But you can see that there's no happiness. They're bragging about what they've accomplished, but there's no real happy moments. Well, I reached this and then I took time off and I spent time with my family and went and did this. It took months. Like they don't have those memories. They don't have that grounding. And so it's great that you're coaching people to be able to be successful, but it's still spiritual centered. It's still about, you know, you want to appreciate life. So along this journey, we're going to help you make the money, right? We're going to help you goal set, get you to where you want to go. But along the way, we're going to coach you. I'm going to coach you to make sure that you don't forget about relationships. You don't forget about your diet and lifestyle, because if that falls apart, what good is it? I've known people that have reached their pinnacle of what they want to make income-wise, come down with a life-crippling disease or pass away a few years later, and they miss the journey of life up to there. So it's, you and I are we're similar in a lot of ways. I do that with people with, again, financial planning and life coaching. It's all tied together. Sat with a young couple a few days ago where we talked about different things like that, things that they never ever thought about, right? You know, they've never been taught it. Learned behaviors, societal behaviors that are taught through movies, television, music, list goes on. Nobody ever really sat them down, their parents and friends, and challenged them the way I challenged them in one meeting, right? Mm-hmm. And it's not because I'm trying to tear their life apart. I'm trying to make people use what God gave them, 6 inches between their ears and a brain that's thrive, you know, will thrive and is thirsty for information, good information, right? So I like how we have a lot of commonalities. We're out there to serve and help people financially, but to the core of working on their purposeful life and understanding that they're, you know, do you have a game plan? Do you have goals? What are your core values? What are core values? Or these are mine. Well, let's figure some out for me. Well, what do you like? What do you, you know, just having, but it all starts on conversation. Like we talked about so many times throughout this, right? We need to learn to converse. We need to learn to put ourselves out there, take constructive criticism. And if you're in a group of good people, that criticism or selective information they're sharing or education is always going to be good. It's not going to be delivered wrong. It's going to be delivered in a way that you can, again, we talked about that too, is how we deliver things. It all ties back to the fact that people such as yourself and me are needed in this society, and we're going to help one person at a time.
That's the plan.
Right? That is the plan. So in your spare time, you're also a musician. Brother, like, when do you have time to sleep? You know, music heals in its own way, whether one's listening to it or creating it. You know, I know both. I have some pretty famous friends of mine that are musicians in my country and in the U.S. as well. And I understand what they do when, you know, creating it, what it does for them. But they always talk about the fact in order to get to that point of creating, they were a person that listened to music and it touched their soul and it took away pain and anguish. Obviously, those listening or watching, if you're listening to music that's sappy and sad and disparaging because you're feeling that way, that's not going to help. You need to listen, read, watch, do things that are going to change your state different than what it is. So music's meant to heal. It's not supposed to make you keep you anchored where you're feeling, right? Correct. So how has music changed your life personally, spiritually, and within your business?
Yeah. The cool thing with music is 100% of people like music. It's not, it's a question of what type of music, but 100% of people enjoy music. And so finding ways in which to utilize music to be uplifting, as you were mentioning, it's an essential practice for anyone to actually live a somewhat fulfilled life. And again, I'm not suggesting everyone has to become a musician or everyone has to start singing or whatever the case might be, but 100% of people like music because it allows one to actually access and express emotions that we may not otherwise be interested in going and accessing on our own. And it brings things to the surface. And so for me, it's my favorite recreation. It's my favorite way of actually just expressing instead of repressing feelings, is find a healthy way to get them out and express them. And as you mentioned, how do you have time for the music? I'm extremely lazy. I'm very proudly lazy because I do as little effort as possible. I mean, we work maybe 25, 30 hours a week, something like that. I mean, I feel like I'm always working and never working simultaneously because it never feels like work. But anyway, but in terms of like actual hours spent, maybe somewhere between 20 to 30 hours a week. And I believe it's important to have healthy boundaries around the amount of hours that we work. And since I'm helping other people, I then have to follow it myself. And so we spend a lot of time with music. And for those of you who are watching this, if you're not watching this, behind me is about, I don't know, a few dozen, well, at least in the room.
Instruments. Yeah, I can see them.
Some you can see, some you can't. Yeah, all types of instruments from
trumpet, guitar, violin, electric guitar, acoustic guitars. I can't see some of the ones in the back.
You got a sitar back there.
Oh, you got a sitar too. I have a friend that plays a sitar. Yeah.
And so we've got all these different instruments that, depending on how I'm feeling in a different day, you use that instrument as a form of expression and communication, and many of which you can't even see all the instruments, but it's a really healthy form of expression. And the cool thing with music is it is a language. Just as learning any other language, it provides unique ways to express yourself. Those many friends who are bilingual or trilingual or whatever the case might be, there's ways in which they can fully feel like they've articulated what they want to say because they're not confined just by, say, one language. So similarly, learning an additional language, say that of music, provides additional opportunities to our points earlier, communicate and express and convey things that, when they're beautified by a melody and some rhythm, that creates a vehicle in which these concepts can actually enter into the ears and then enter into the heart. And so that's why I'm just such a fan of music. And all of our music is really just philosophy put rhythmically.
Oh, absolutely. How many songwriters have said that they do poetry or they write poems or they're writing something and that verse becomes a song, becomes the chorus, becomes the melody, whatever the case may be. Music connects right into our heart, right into our cells. Like, I honestly believe it does. And it if we're happy and we're listening to music that uplifts us and our mind is happy, disease is far, far and few. Doesn't mean you can't be a person that comes down with cancer or some sort of disease or something strikes you. But I believe the healthier we are with our mindset, and that involves using music, mentorship, coaching, gratitude, spirituality, all of that, that's a healthy life. And you're going to live a healthier life, in my opinion, of course. But I like how you shared about what music does for you. Those watching, you see how Madhu's whole face lit up, right? And I challenge you to go onto YouTube and just look at all the instruments he has. It's beautiful to look at, actually. So you play the violin too. That's awesome.
Something like that. Yeah.
You know, something like that.
Fortunately, it sounds a little bit, but yeah, I enjoy as many instruments as I can get my hand on trying to learn how to play them. And, you know, sound carries consciousness. It's like the sounds that we listen to is we become them. You know, whatever we're spending our time listening to, our life moves in that direction, because where attention goes, energy flows. So where we're putting our attention is usually the things that are coming into our senses, the auditory sense being the most pulling, which is why we use, say, an alarm clock to wake up and not an oil diffuser, because certain senses pull our attention more. Just like in this conversation, if somebody hears an ambulance driving by, their attention is going to be pulled to the siren, and they're going to have to pull their attention back to what they're hearing here. And so because sound carries our consciousness and carries our attention, it's so essential that we put sound vibrations into our ears that are actually uplifting, that are actually beneficial, that are actually nourishing. Because otherwise, if you're just letting any sound go in, it's of course we're going to suffer. Of course we're going to be miserable.
Of course. Well, it's just like any association, what we read, and like I coach people on there, you know, don't have bad days. Tell yourself you're having a bad moment. How can you get out of that bad moment? Well, usually that bad moment is triggered through what we just read, what we just listened to, right? The list goes on. So pick what you're going to listen to, pick what you're going to read when you're in those character building moments of something that you had no control of coming into your sphere of influence, and it creates you to have that bad moment. Utilize good music, a good audio book, are good, you know, if you're a person that actually reads the paper book, then make sure you're reading a book that's uplifting. Make sure you're watching some, maybe watch a biography of something that's uplifting. You can change your state in a very short period of time. You have a very short period of time to do that before it engulfs you and you allow it to engulf you. So we have to practice purposeful life. It always goes back to like my book, Give a Heck, How to Live Life on Purpose, Not by Accident. It always goes back to purposeful living is not easy. It's not hard, but it takes effort and it takes work, and you need to plan it out so that it becomes a habitual thing in your daily life, from being grateful to prayer, to exercise, proper diet, proper communication. And people are going, well, that's a lot of work. Well, you know what? Nobody ever said life as an adult isn't something that you need to put effort in, that it's not work. The result of that work, though, is a very purposeful, happy life. And you're surrounded with people that are going to be the same. You become a magnet to it, just like you become a magnet to people that are like that yourself.
You're mentioning music, audiobooks, et cetera. And I say, maybe even a podcast, maybe even this one.
Yes, yes. I forgot podcasts. I'm sorry. Oh my goodness. I can't believe I forgot podcasts. Yes. This podcast is being brought to you by Madhu. No, just kidding. At the end of the day, yes, podcasts. I do. I have some great podcast people I listen to that really uplift me. And man, there's some terrible podcast categories out there. And those listening, if you're offended, I'm sorry, but listening to podcasts about a serial killer, like, are you serious? Or listening to podcasts about crime or, you know, haunted this or haunted that, or, you know, I get it. There can be some things in your life that you enjoy, but a lot of people that enjoy that type of podcast or take it very serious. Just like people watching drama shows, I laugh. You know, you go, they have that old conversation, or you go around the water cooler the next day and everybody's talking about that drama show. Can you believe such and such did that in that show? Blah, blah, blah. They live the reality of the, and it's not their reality. So my point is listen to stuff that's going to be productive, read things that are going to be productive, that are really enhancing and up-leveling you and keeping you on the climb, not living vicariously through somebody else's drama. Anyway, I'll get off my soapbox on that. So Madhu, if you had to give our listeners one last closing message, what would you tell them in regards to giving a heck and never giving up?
What I would specifically say is that know that there's no such thing as hopelessness. Know that there's always opportunities and there's always support available. All we have to do is accept that reality and then be open and receptive to the opportunities that come our way. Hopelessness, when we start to say, oh, screw it all. Oh, you know, I'm supposed to suffer. Oh, this isn't for me, whatever the case might be. That's really where we start to disempower ourselves. So if we accept the reality that there's more help and support and care and love for us than we could possibly imagine, once we accept that reality and then become receptive to all the opportunities that can allow us to say, give a heck in life, or in which really presents the opportunity to do something magical with this life, know that there's always an opportunity, and then be receptive and take those opportunities. And then before you know it, life just gets easier and easier. And purpose becomes obvious, because when you actually sit with the reality of what life is, we are faced with, you can't avoid your talents and your gifts. It's going to become as apparent as the sun coming up in the sky. And so know there's hope, and then be receptive to those opportunities that present themselves in your life.
That's a great closing message. Really, at the end of the day, the more purposeful we get, it can help us. It becomes a guiding force, a compass in our life. And it really, maybe you decide as you get be more purposeful, the job you're in isn't satisfying enough for you. Maybe it's not something that's morally right for you. Maybe you decide to go back to school. Maybe you decide to become an entrepreneur. Maybe you decide to go on a different career path. Maybe you just decide to become a kinder person, the person that you wish others were to you, because you're becoming more purposeful and realizing that you were on a path of, you know, just emptiness. And again, I'm not saying those listening or watching are empty. Maybe you're feeling any of the things that we're talking about, and working on your purpose is a great grounding mechanism for you, right? So I appreciate your time. And, you know, the podcast is over, but I want to respect our listeners and make sure they know how to reach you. What's the best way they can reach you?
So on any platform or our website, it's madhu.life. That's madhu.life. Madhu.life. On any social, that's our website as well. And, you know, we give everything away for free. So we have tons of courses, from health to growing business to improving relationships to spirituality. We actually don't charge for any of it. We actually give it all away. The only thing we sell on the back of this implementation, if people don't want to have to figure how to implement it into their life, that's where we step in. But we have so many thousands of people that we get to share on a regular basis with within our community. And so if anyone's interested in just making life a little easier, just drop us a message on madhu.life anywhere. And let's do this. Send me the word heck. If you send me the word heck, not only will I get you access to our community, but if you're coming from just this podcast, what I'll do is I have one exercise on purpose specifically, which is so relevant to our conversation we had, that I'd like to just gift. We usually just use it with our clients, but I'll gift it to anyone who sends us the word heck. But make sure you send the word heck so I know that. We can give you the extra thing as well. That would be really
so fun. So I'm going to send you my own name so I can get it too. Does that work?
for how about this? You're the only one who doesn't have to send it. We'll just do it.
Because I'd love to see it. I'm always looking at enhancing purposeful living, right? That's my whole goal, has been for many years. So I appreciate you. Any last words you'd like to add before we wrap up the show?
Yeah, just if you're ever unhappy, just serve. And if you don't believe me, try it. If you're like, I don't think it works, and just try it. Challenge me. If you're ever unhappy in life, if you're ever not satisfied, just go be of service somehow and watch the magic that happens, and then keep coming back to this podcast.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Service is great. And it really does make your life purposeful, right? When you're giving away your time, talents, and treasures and expecting very little back, life takes care of you, right? So thanks so much for being on Give a Heck. I appreciate your time and sharing some of your experiences so that others too can learn. It is never too late to give a heck.
Thank you for taking time out of your day and listening to Give a Heck. If you find value, I'd appreciate you sharing with your friends and family so they too can learn how to live life on purpose, not by accident. So you do not miss the next episode, please subscribe on your favorite podcast platform, and please also post a review. I look forward to reading your comments. This has been Dwight Heck. If you want to check out other podcast episodes or today's show notes, please check out my website, giveaheck.com. And until next time, together, let us all strive to give a heck.